Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RTE.ie is the simple email. Let's go straight to somebody who's in mandatory quarantine near Dublin Airport, Inbar Avazir. Inbar, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, good. It happened so quickly yesterday that up to a few minutes ago, you actually thought you were in a different hotel. You thought you were in the Crown Plaza, but you're actually, you've discovered you're in at the Holiday Inn Express in Dublin.
Yes, that's true. Okay. It's all a bit of a mess.
Okay, tell us what happened yesterday.
Well, I arrived to Dublin from Israel. I'm here for my new job. My healthcare profession are working in clinical trials. And I arrived, it was all fine. And then at the immigration officer told me that since I arrived from Israel, I have to quarantine in a hotel. Okay. And I had no idea that I have to do that. So I was a bit in shock. Waited there for a very long time for the police to come, for them to arrange the papers, for me to call my employer and ask for them to pay for the quarantine. And it was just a big mess. But here I am at the hotel.
Okay, so tell us, so you're in the airport, and how do you get to do, what's the next, how does it unfold? How do you get to the hotel?
So the immigration officer called a Garda police.
Yeah.
Officer, he came by, asked me a few questions. It took a long while, but he was very lovely. And then they called the army to get me and take me to the hotel. But I landed, it was around 11:30 in the morning, and I got to the hotel only around 3:30. And it was all a bit of a mess. They didn't have all the answers. I asked, how long do I have to stay in the hotel? How can I, you know, get myself out of there since I have my COVID vaccines, both of them, and a negative PCR test result. So I had so many questions and no one really could answer any of them.
So you've had the vaccine, which most people in Israel have. You've had a PCR.
Hello?
How recently did you have the PCR test, Inbar? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. Moving around the room. Okay, we'll try and get Inbar back. She's in the Holiday Inn. She's mandatory quarantine. She's been vaccinated, had a PCR test a few days ago, came in from Israel, didn't know what was happening. In fact, as we say, up to about 20 minutes ago, she thought she was in the Crown Plaza because she was whisked away, and now she discovers through the letterheading in the room that she's actually in the Holiday Inn Express. Zachary Kelly is, Inbar is your girlfriend, is that correct?
That's exactly. Correct. Yeah.
Your fiance.
How are you, Joe?
Oh, good. Yeah, how are you? When did you?
Good. Good.
When did you realise this was unfolding?
Well, when she gave me a phone call and said that, despite having two vaccinations and having the COVID test, that she was getting brought to quarantine. So that was a bit of a shock because I was just in the house because the hotel at the airport's just within outside my 5K.
Okay.
So it was just, then it was all a bit of a shock. And Inbar applied to the state liaison officer, and you can apply to get your case seen to.
Mm-hmm.
But that was rejected. I don't really know why. And like what was also very puzzling is like there was lots of other people on her flight from Frankfurt. And they're just, like, let through, and we don't know if they've been vaccinated or not, or what strains they, and Inbar has been vaccinated. We've been waiting for months to try and get this vaccination, and we've all been locked down, like, about a year, and it's just been going on so long, Joe. And, like, you know, even when someone does have the vaccinations, it's in a hotel for mandatory quarantine. It just doesn't make too much sense.
Okay, tell us, Inbar's back there now. Inbar, tell us about the hotel room and the facilities.
Well, it's not the best hotel I've been to, I can tell you that. The toilet is a bit smelly. It feels like someone just smoked there a cigarette. The toilet doesn't work very well. And I'm totally dependent on the reception for anything I need. So, for example, I didn't bring with me any toothpaste because I didn't think, I need it at all. So they kindly gave me a complimentary tiny, tiny little tube of toothpaste, which will probably not last more than 2 days. But I guess this is what it is. I have to call if I want to get out of my room just to get some fresh air or just anything I need. And they never answer the phone and need to call at least 3 times. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, but it's just not the best experience.
I'm just asking you to describe. That's fine. And is there security? Yeah. Is there security in the hotel in Bar?
There is security, yes.
Okay. And what have they said to you that you must not do?
Well, I'm not allowed to leave my room.
Okay.
If I want to get some fresh air or, you know, for smokers, if they want to smoke, they need to call in advance. Basically, I'm locked in my room.
But is your room actually locked for fire safety?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, okay. Sorry. It was just a figure of speech. It's not locked, no.
Okay, I'm just thinking of fire safety. Do you have a balcony? Do windows open? Do you have fresh air?
I can open them a bit. Don't have a balcony, no.
And what about food?
A regular hotel room.
As you say, you weren't prepped for a 2-week stay in a hotel room.
No.
So you didn't have toiletries. I presume you don't have enough change of clothing for a fortnight. What about food? Have you eaten there yet?
Yes, I have. So they provide food 3 times a day. The food is actually pretty okay.
Okay.
I even have a choice, you know, what do I want for dinner? So that's really nice.
Okay.
That's fine.
And did they say if you have any dietary requirements, they could meet them?
Yes. If people who have allergies or a vegan or vegetarian, yeah, they will provide food for them.
Okay. Now, money, who's paying the 2,000 euro?
So I've been very, very lucky because I came to Ireland with a company that I'm supposed to start working for by the end of the month, and they offered to pay for my quarantine here.
Wow.
But many of the other people here are not that lucky, and they, you know, we're put on surprise, and they need to pay for it.
Okay. And have you seen other people in the hotel who were in quarantine in Bar?
No. Only when I came to the hotel, there's a lot of paperwork that I had to fill out. They put us all in the lobby in different tables. Mm-hmm. We had to fill out a lot of paperwork. And surprisingly, I don't know, you think it's because people are in risk, they'll be very, very cautious and put people, mm-hmm. you know, in distance and be all wearing masks. But that was not the case at all. It was a mess. People didn't know what they're doing. Had to call a few people over and again to get through with my documents, with my papers.
And how are you going to pass the time?
Lots of Netflix, probably.
Yeah, Netflix, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, have you got Wi-Fi? Have you got Wi-Fi, for example?
I do, yes. They provide Wi-Fi for free.
Okay, and have you got your phone is working, obviously?
Yes, it is.
And have you been told categorically in Bar you're going to be there for 2 weeks, even though you've been doubly vaccinated, even though you've done a COVID test? There's no appeal that you can go beyond the one you've already used.
I tried to appeal to the state liaison officer here.
Okay.
As soon as I got to the hotel, I filled out an application telling them that it basically makes no sense because I can provide documentation showing and proving that I've vaccinated both jabs and I have a negative PCR test. But they said, well, since Israel is on the list for Category 2, I believe it's called, they cannot let me out of here. And I just think it's absurd. I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. But by the way, how is Israel? Is it as nearly back to normal as we here in Bar with the number of people vaccinated?
Oh, almost everything is back to normal in Israel.
Wow.
Most of the population is vaccinated. You know, malls are open, schools are open. Everything is open. They're just about to announce that there's no need for masks outside anymore.
Wow.
That's how good we're doing. So
schools are important. Very, very important. But you'd say life, well, is there concerts or restaurants open? Or?
Yeah, all open, inside and outside. Anyone can come. We have this green passport, it's called. So if you're vaccinated, you get a green passport and you can present it at a concert or a restaurant in the mall and they let you in, no problem.
Okay. And I just wonder, Imbar, is the passport, is the green passport, is that being enforced at the doors of restaurants and hotels and venues?
Of course it is getting enforced. Yes, you can get a restaurant can get a big fine if they don't enforce it.
Okay. Did you get you're in Israel, you're well used to seeing the Israeli the IDF on the streets. But were you taken aback when you saw the Irish Army there at the airport to take you away?
This was the first time I saw the Irish Army. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a bit surprised.
The IDF, the honest, Irish Defence Force.
The Irish.
Okay. Zachary, I presume, you can FaceTime or whatever, but I presume you can't go up and wave up at the window of the Holiday Inn Express and see your fiancé.
It would just be beyond my 5K limit at the moment, Joe, so I wouldn't want to be breaking the law in that regard.
Yeah, I know, you're very strict. You're very correct.
Yeah, you just got to be careful. We've all been in together for so long, and hopefully we're in the home stretch now. So if we can get the vaccinations rolled out as quickly as possible, I think we all would like to have a little bit of a summer. It's been difficult for all of us.
Well, the Minister for Health is saying he thinks we're going to have a summer that was beyond imagination 3 months ago. Now, that depends on what you were imagining 3 months ago. That's what he says. Zachary, where did you meet, by the way?
We met in Bali.
Oh, Bali.
I was living out in Australia at the time.
Bali Fairman, or Bali
Bali in Indonesia.
Lovely.
Yeah, a little bit sunnier, Joe.
A little bit sunnier. Say that again. Inbar, can you walk from your hotel room in quarantine? You there, Inbar? Oh, it's gone again.
There's a signal
maybe in that room. So there's a signal. Inbar, can you walk from your hotel room?
Do you mean walk outside?
No, can you walk? Can you participate in your occupation in the hotel room?
Oh, work, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, yes, I have a computer with me, so I can do some basic things here, yes.
And would you be able to tell me what clinical trials you were going to be working on, or did you know?
I prefer not to.
Okay, but that's your background, isn't it?
It is, yes. Clinical trials with new therapeutics and medical devices.
Okay, well done. And Israel is a leading provider of them in the world as well. It's Israel or Ireland and Israel are often in competition for pharmaceutical and indeed computer plants. Okay, so we'll keep in touch, Inbar. I hope it goes as well as it can, but it looks like you're there for 2 weeks and then you'll need another PCR test to get out on day 14.
Yes, I do. Hopefully, I'm going to leave soon in some way or another. I have to do another PCR test on the 10th day, and that if that's negative, I'll be able to get out before the 14 days.
Okay. Yeah. Can Zachary send stuff into you in the hotel? Can he post stuff? Given that you're going to be there for 2 weeks and our postal system is so good, if he posted material today, it could get to you tomorrow. Zachary, I'm giving you ideas here.
Yeah, thanks, Joe.
I don't know. What would you like? Is there any special food you'd like, or are you allowed to have a glass?
I'd love a burger, Zachary.
You'd love a burger.
Or maybe Irish Cadbury chocolate, it's always popular.
Yeah, it's best chocolate in the world.
You're there.
But what about say clothes, Inbar? Have you enough clothes for the 2 weeks?
Well, not that you're going anywhere, is it? Yeah, no, I'm not going anywhere. But I do. I was planning to move here. I came here with my stuff from Israel because I'm starting this new job and to live with my fiance.
Wow.
So I do have stuff with me, fortunately.
Okay. And is it fair to? Well, are you allowed a bottle of wine, Inbar? I don't know whether
you do not have a bottle of wine with me now.
But are you allowed to order alcohol from the bar in the hotel?
I need to order it specifically. Yeah, okay. I don't have a mini bar in my hotel room.
Well, maybe there's an idea for Zachary. Given Zach that you're down as the two of you are introduced here in the communication as a fiance, have we a date for the wedding?
Not yet, Joe. Okay. Baby steps.
When did you get engaged?
About. About 6 weeks ago.
What prompted the engagement?
It was just with COVID and everything. We just thought it would be a good time.
And have you ever, apart from coming to see Zach in Barr, have you ever been to Ireland before for a long period?
I have actually. Yes, I've been here twice.
Wow.
Once just this past December, for Christmas.
Oh, okay.
I came to say hello, yes. And the other one was, Zach's best friend got married and I came to the wedding with him.
Oh, lovely.
That was lovely.
And have you met Zach's family?
I have, yeah, he has.
Okay.
Great
parents.
Both my parents actually had COVID, so it was
sorry to hear that.
Yeah, so my mum just actually broke her leg there, so she's in hospital there, so she might even be listening in. She's a big fan of the show, Joe.
Okay, we'll say hello to her. And have you met Imbars? Have you been to Israel?
No, with the COVID, because they've shut down the borders,
Of course, yeah. Very strict. Very strict. Okay, we'll keep in touch. I presume you can give a list of things. Have you books in bars or anything? Any books you'd like specifically, or is there anything? I know everything is on the iPad. Most things are on the iPad. But if you need anything, give us a shout or give Zach a shout, preferably. And you'll know Zach and Imbar.
Yeah.
With Imbar stuck in a hotel on her own, about 6K from where you are at the minute, and she's stuck there for 2 weeks against her will, you're going to know in 2 weeks whether this engagement is going to last. I suspect it is. But
I know it will last, Joe. Don't worry. We know it will last.
Okay.
Thanks
brilliant.
Very much.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Inbar, are you accepting that this is the law of the land and you'll abide by it? You're not going to try and make a run for it?
No, no. I'm totally respect the law here. But
okay.
To be honest, I just think it's nonsense.
Why? Because
having... Well, now that vaccines, people are getting vaccinated all over in many different countries, putting specific countries on a list that, makes them go to quarantine if you're coming from that country doesn't make much sense anymore. It has to be specific for the person coming in. If he's vaccinated and he shows a negative COVID test, why put him in quarantine? Risk here.
Yeah. And did you plead that your work was in the clinical area? Could that be deemed essential work?
I have. It didn't work. They just don't care. Not about my work and not about my
You haven't started
vaccination.
Work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We'll keep in touch over the next. Have you a radio there, Inbar?
No, I don't.
Well, you have to get it on. You have to get out RT on your... on your iPad and keep up to date with what's happening. Okay, Zach, the two of you are obviously in constant contact.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. How's your mum and dad, by the way? Are they over the COVID?
Mum was in hospital for maybe 6 weeks, but she managed to get over it, and dad was quite sick for a while, but they both managed to get over it, and they're just... Dad's still cocooning a little bit, and they're just looking to really. I think they've lost a year. I think a lot of people have, and that's the way they feel. And they're just really looking forward to opening up. Dad's got one jab, and Mum's got one jab as well. So I think they're just waiting for the second.
Yeah,
and, but everything just start opening up, really, Joe.
Okay. And what do you think of Inbar's point that her being held against her will, so to speak, and told not to leave? Is nonsense.
Well, it's just basically, I think you had other people on the flight come from Germany, just sailed straight on through and not a bother on them, yet the person that's probably got the least likelihood of spreading COVID with her double vaccination and her negative PCR test, that's the person that is put in quarantine for 10 days. It just doesn't really make much logical sense. And I think that's the major problem at this point in time. Maybe the ministers who are doing the lists will reconsider.
They say they're going to expand the list, but there's a big reluctance, apparently. For example, Inbar, do you know if there was people on the plane from Austria, from France, from Germany on your flight?
I don't know any of them.
Okay.
But they all, you know, just came through no problems for the immigration in the airport. So.
But they came through Frankfurt. Where was your?
They came through Frankfurt.
Yeah. So. Okay, because the European countries are, that must quarantine are Albania, Andorra, Austria. Did you see anyone from Austria?
There was one family that was set aside with me at the immigration. They came from Austria, yes. There was a nice couple and a little baby who was crying. And we were just waiting them there.
And were they allowed to continue their journey?
Well, I don't know what happened with them, actually.
Okay. Apparently, if you're going to Northern Ireland, you're allowed to continue your journey. Monaco, Kosovo, mm-hmm. Moldova, Montenegro, North Macedonia, San Marino and Serbia are all almost quarantined. Okay, stay safe, Inbar, and welcome to Ireland. And Zachary, stay in touch.
Thanks very much,
with Inbar and with us as well, the two of you, if you wish. Okay, thank and kind regards to your parents. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Now, this story jumped out at me because my own mother used to work in Semprit factory. Well, most of Ballyfermot at one stage worked in Semprit. The incredibly big tyre manufacturer, used to manufacture tyres. It's where Park West is now, near where Thornton's, opposite Thornton's there. I think the plant was over a mile long, employed well over 1,000 people. But Elizabeth Sullivan, her father died in March last year at the start of the pandemic. Elizabeth, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you? And condolences on Paddy's passing. How did you find out that he died from asbestos, effectively?
Well, about a year or so before he died, he had pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
And there was talk of the asbestos having, you know, caused that in some way, but we didn't really relate it to the pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the year after that, before he died, he would get this very severe pain. It would just come on him like two or three times in the day. And other than that, he had no pain, and it would just be this really sharp pain that he would get for, mm-hmm. you know, 2 or 3 minutes, and then he'd recover from it. But it was very bad. And it was only about 2 months before he died that they told me that he had mesothelioma, which mm-hmm. is a very aggressive form of cancer caused from asbestos. From having contact with asbestos years mm-hmm. prior to that. So it was only really, you know, 2 months before he died that I knew that that actually was what he had, you know.
And was there any, because I presume that your dad had to be tested after he passed for COVID, but is that how you discovered the actual cause of death?
Well, no, I knew that.
He had
the mesothelioma 2 months before he died, and he was going to die of that.
Hmm.
We were unsure at the time of his death. Well, sorry, they had the initially on the cause of death, it was the mesothelioma. But at the time, at the very beginning of the pandemic, people were dying of coronavirus, and that wasn't being reported on their death certificates. So at that time, the coroner sent me out an email saying that because he had died at that time in the hospital, and they were checking a lot of the deaths at that time to make sure that the coronavirus death toll was accurate,
yeah.
So they wanted us to have, they wanted to do an inquest to make sure that it actually was mesothelioma that he had died from and not coronavirus.
Okay.
But he had had a test a couple of days before he died.
Oh,
and it was negative, but who knows if actually he did die of coronavirus or not. I'm not sure, because so many tests are negative and they're falsely so.
But he had been diagnosed with mesothelioma, which is a form of cancer that's caused by inhaling asbestos fibres. Well, and yes. Why do you think it was in the Semperit factory that this happened?
Well, I'm not 100% sure if it was in the Semperit factory, but he hadn't had any exposure before that he knew of.
Okay.
But he used to say that he knew men that also were sick.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was from the asbestos in the factory. And I've looked it up since, and because it was, the tires are made of rubber, there is a huge risk of fire from the rubber.
Yeah.
And they use this talc in the molds that generally had asbestos in it,
mm-hmm.
so that because the talc was a fire hazard,
they
need to take the tires out of the molds, and the best way to do it was to use this talc. So it could have been that, or it could have been used in the insulation around the piping in the factory.
Yeah.
And my father was an electrician. He worked with the wiring and all of the machines, so he could have been exposed through that, through the insulation.
And how long did he work in Semperit, Elizabeth?
He worked for about 20 years from the late 70s until the early 90s. He got some sort of a redundancy package.
Yeah, it started winding down and then
it
closed in 1996. Now, you're right about the fire risk in Semperit, because I was there on a number of occasions. I'd say my mother used to work there, but the and she's fine now. She's 92 next week or a few weeks.
Oh, that's lovely.
But, yeah, but she worked cleaning the offices in the evening. That was her job. But when I was on the factory floor, you're right about fire, because they had their own fire engine and fire officers based in the plant. They had a fire truck just in case something happened. But two, it struck me walking round the plant when I did a tour. It was a very, it's rubber. It's dirty. It's black. It's dusty.
Yeah.
Now, would have it come from the rubber itself, from the general environment in the factory? And there was
I'm not sure if they used asbestos. I don't know if they used asbestos in the rubber, but I can tell you my father came home after having a shower.
Yeah.
Every day he would come
home.
And his skin still had the remnants of the black.
You'd be like, they'd come home in Ballyfermot like coal miners.
Yes.
Yeah.
And my aunt and uncle used to say that he used to rub the black from Semperit into his hair to keep him, because he stayed dark till he was quite old. He didn't have a grey hair in his head till he was quite old, and they used to say he was just rubbing the black from the tyres into his hair to keep it dark.
And we get into the dust, we get into your eyes. I just
everywhere. Yeah, it was everywhere.
And it was for people. I tried to explain to people, because the factory's effectively gone. My memory of when Semperit opened, Elizabeth, is I stepped out my hall door in Claddagh Green, which is across from the plant. Well, it'd be a good mile away. And I thought I was looking at a blue sky, and it was actually the new Semperit factory.
Yeah.
It was a mile long, just no windows, by the way, no windows.
Yeah.
It was at least a mile long, and then it was an open plant. Unless people can check me on this, it was an open plant inside. But my memory of inside is darkness and blackness and rubber and the smell and the dust and and I was only up there on a visit, and the feeling of the dust getting into your pores that you'd never get them out, no matter how much you scrubbed. So the main reason, Elizabeth, you want to bring attention to this is why?
So, my father was 40 when he started there, and he was about 60 when he finished working there. But there must be younger people that worked there from maybe they were 18 or so, and and finished when they were maybe 38 or so.
Mm-hmm.
But this mesothelioma, this asbestos, exposure caused cancer, it only affects people decades after, so
yeah.
maybe 20, 30 years after. So there must be people out there now that worked in that factory that are starting to get ill now from this asbestos exposure.
Yeah.
And I would like for people to know the symptoms of this cancer because it's very unusual. And it's you know, there's breathlessness. And, like, my father never smoked. And, he got severe pneumonia. And it just didn't seem to make sense. And the pain is so unusual from the mesothelioma that it's hard to understand it. So I just think that people that have worked there need to get this information that, you know, they've been exposed to it and, you know, that they just need to know how they might... how the symptoms might occur, you know. I spoke with the coroner yesterday, Dr. Keane. She was lovely. They were absolutely lovely in the district court, in the coroner's court. And I explained to her that this is what I wanted, and I asked her, what did she have any power at all to have an inquiry should be put into the use of asbestos in the factory and the potential exposure of the men that worked on the factory floor, just so that there might be some sort of an awareness campaign about it, you know?
I just wonder, is there a separate ex-employees Facebook group or that we could contact? And alert people. I know we'll get on to Ken Larkin, who knows everything about Ballyfermot, to see is there, and Vincent Ballyfermot Jackson as well. If there is, and that's you're saying, if you worked in Semprit, don't ignore breathlessness and don't ignore the other, even, as you say, even, I didn't know your dad didn't smoke. Even though he didn't smoke, he had all those indications. And asbestos was regarded as a miracle material when it was invented. It was primarily for the insulation and fireproofing and was used in flats in Ballymun. It was used in houses and kitchens and factories, in hotels. But it's now totally illegal. It is completely illegal. But there's no is there an education campaign? I presume there's an education campaign for people about what you're doing is part of an education campaign.
The coroner told me that the HSA actually does send out information to people that are currently working with asbestos, people that are on construction sites or that would actually be exposed currently. But it's more for the people that have been exposed in the past and, you know, that they, you know, the potential for them to get ill now. That I don't think that, and I think it's the Department of Health that need to do this.
Okay.
I know the NHS in Britain have been doing this, and the British Lung Foundation are making an effort to let people know, you know, the effects of their past exposure, because it's such a good time lag. It's such a long time lag between being exposed and then getting sick, you know, so.
And the what ifs, Elizabeth, I don't know whether this has entered your head, but if your dad had known 10 years beforehand, if...
Yeah.
Do you follow me?
If he had known 10 years before he got sick or 10 years before he started in Semprit?
We'll ask you both. 10 years before he got sick. In other words, if there was a test, if everyone who worked in a factory that was exposed to asbestos was given a test, would that have helped, I wonder? In other words, treatment.
Yes, I'm not 100% sure, and that part of me goes, well, is it better that somebody doesn't know and doesn't have, you know, doesn't know that this is their future, that they're going to get very sick from it? I don't know, but certainly for the families of the people that are around them to help them and to understand and to make, you know...
Yeah.
To understand, because it's such a strange sort of illness, it's so aggressive and
Chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, high temperature, persistent cough, loss of appetite, unexplained weight loss, clubbed or swollen fingertips, can also include tummy pain, general feeling of sickness, loss of appetite, unexplained weight loss, diarrhea, constipation. It's an awful. It's what people will remember the great Christy Hennessy, the singer songwriter genius. That's what Christy died of as well. The exact same thing as your dad, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Christy worked on building sites in London, and was exposed to asbestos in his younger days.
Yeah.
Did your father, when your dad left Semprit or was made redundant, did he work elsewhere, Elizabeth?
Yes, he worked in McDarrah's school as a caretaker for a while, and then he retired just after that.
Now, there is asbestos in schools, but I presume, because I know...
No, he was fixing things around the place, not near anything like that, no.
Okay. Well, condolences on his passing. And can I ask, Elizabeth, what age was your dad in terms of, did he have many years of retirement?
He was 85 when he died.
Okay.
Yeah, last year, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Well, condolences on that. I think what you're doing and highlighting this is, unfortunately, the back of the story is the fact that your father has passed. But I think it's so important. I've often thought it's underreported and underwarned about, not warned about enough in Ireland. And I think if people did suggest or say to a doctor, listen, I did work in a factory where there was asbestos. Does that help? Does that help the diagnosis? And if it helps the diagnosis, it might not cure it. But apparently, it's such a savage illness, but it might allow more palliative and care or whatever.
Yes, and ease of mind as well, because when somebody is sick and you don't actually have a good diagnosis of it, it can be very disheartening, you know.
Yeah, very good point. Are you in the medical area yourself, Elizabeth?
No, I was an accountant in my former life before I became a mother.
Okay.
And then a daughter.
Right, well done. But I'm just saying, if you're an expert on asbestos and all the effects it could have, but I'm interested in finding out from people working. Maybe Semprit ran, they were an Austrian company. Maybe they ran regular tests on people up there. I don't know. I don't know whether your dad ever spoke about that. Maybe regular tests. Maybe any former employee. The only former employee I know worked in the fire service in there. That's how I know him. They lived in dread of a fire, as you were right, the dread of a fire because of all the flammable material. Okay, Elizabeth, condolences to you and your family on the passing of your dad, and thanks for sending out this educational message to so many people. Stay safe, Elizabeth and family. That's Elizabeth Sullivan.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
By the way, breaking news. We think we have found, after 55 years, we have found the ear off the head of Nelson's Pillar, which was blown up in 1966 by an offshoot, so to speak, of the IRA. And the head was subsequently retrieved by Dublin City Council. Then it was stolen by a group of students who were bringing it around the country primarily for charity purposes, I think. And then it was retrieved, and it's now back in a beautiful display cabinet in the Gilbert Library in Pierce Street in Dublin, unfortunately currently closed. We've had contact. Now, we're trying to raise that person again who told us they have the ear of Nelson nearly over half a century, and that we'll try and find out what's going to happen. Okay, where is Trish Gordon contacted us. Trish, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Bake Off, one of the most popular programmes in wild earthly world at this stage. But you're watching Bake Off with Matt Lucas and whoever else is on it at the minute. And what happened?
It was, I suppose, what drew my attention was the comment by Matt Lucas when Nadine Coyle was talking.
Mm-hmm.
Where he kind of, to me now, it's all a matter of interpretation, but to me with derision went, I don't know what she's talking about. I don't know what she just said.
Based on her accent, her Derry accent.
Because of the way she pronounced the word flour, which is probably the way I'm pronouncing it, F-L-O-U-R. But I just thought, okay,
yeah.
Hold on. You've got John Bishop, who has a very strong Liverpool accent.
That's right.
And I didn't hear him correct him for anything. So I thought about it, and I thought her reaction really pleased me in one sense and annoyed me in another sense. She didn't take the bait.
Yeah.
But I thought about it, and I thought probably she's well used to being given the old put down.
Yeah,
and so she just smiled and got on with it.
You heard it as a put down.
To me, man, it's interpretation all the way. But what was it about if it wasn't a put down?
Okay, I think we have a clip. Yeah, we have a clip.
I need about an hour extra time.
Nadine, how are you doing there?
Who knows? Your guess is as good as mine. Well, if I had a practice then, I would have been really nervous because I would have been like, I'm a terrible baker.
You've got quite a strong accent, so I'm not sure what happened there.
How could he not understand that?
Exactly, Joe.
There wasn't one word of what that girl said
that wasn't totally clear.
And that was Matt Lucas speaking, saying she's quite a strong accent.
Not out loud, not to her face. It was kind of the little sneer, the little aside, like, God help us, you know. We can't work out what she says. Can you do that? Are you allowed to do that with someone from Jamaica, from Pakistan, from India, from France, is it okay to do it with them as well?
Okay, keep asking the questions, yeah, because I see Nadine is now trending on YouTube with that exact issue that you're talking about, her pronunciation of flower, apparently.
The word flower was apparently what sparked it, but look, did it matter? There's two things going on there, though, Joe. There's the whole male-female thing.
Mm-hmm.
What can she say that doesn't make her out to be a naggy woman, a harridan, a hormonal woman, whatever?
Yeah.
I just thought, my friend sent me that this morning, 20 minutes past 8. She went, here we go again. And I read it and looked at the clip and I went, yeah, here we go again.
But Nadine now, she's a great talent, but she's been in the business for 15, 20, I know she's quite young still, but she's a pro, like, she knows.
She is in the public eye and ear for a long time. What is she supposed to do? I mean, I was saying to your researcher, I remember at the age of 11 going to this particular school where they did fancy things like elocution. And the first day of elocution, the teacher said, if any of you are here to have your accent changed, you can leave now. I don't do accent change.
Okay.
Your accent is
brilliant.
Part of who you are.
Brilliant.
We just teach you to speak. Your diction is clear, and you can project if you're in a crowd or whatever.
And pronunciation and...
Yes, the diction and the pronunciation are the key things. And is Nadine supposed to have a different accent so Matt Lucas is happy with what she says?
That's a good point. Now, Trish, did you ever encounter any resistance to your accent, so to speak?
I never so much, not what I was saying. But I remember once being in London, in Victoria Station, with its 30-something platforms, and I coming from Lurgan, where there was no building even, because people kept blowing it up, so they didn't bother rebuilding it. It was like the Wild West, just down at the edge of the track and wait for the train to come. And I didn't know where a particular train came in. And I asked one of the people there, could you tell me which platform has the train from Ilford?
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he said, can you not read? I said, no. And he said, effing Irish.
My God.
In a voice that more or less said, Well, you're Irish. Of course you can't read.
Oh, my God.
And you can say it's interpretation or you can say it's my perception. Maybe it is.
Mm-hmm.
Is it necessary? What does that comment by Matt Lucas say about Matt Lucas?
And what That's do you, well, you tell me what you think it says about Matt Lucas. He's a comedian. He's a comedian, isn't he?
So that was funny then?
No, I don't know. I wouldn't.
Because I think they, I suppose the onus is on the speaker of something that's derogatory. It says more about them than the person. Like, I would not have any issue being Nadine Coy, looking that good, being that talented, fitting so much into her life already. To me, that says more about Matt Lucas than it does about Nadine.
Well, we've been told here by a listener, in June 2020, David Walliams and Matt Lucas have apologised for their use of blackface in their sketch show Little Britain. Both comedians expressed their regret about their portrayals of characters of other races in almost identical statements posted on Twitter.
Mm. And what part of their brain was not operating properly that thought it was okay to do blackface in the first place? Where does that arrogance come from?
Well, are you comparing blackface to slagging Nadine Coyle's Derry Girl accent?
Well, hold on. Let's not go that far.
Okay, but okay.
If you take that Scotland, various parts of England, Wales and Northern Ireland are all part of Britain, why is it okay to scorn her accent when she lives in part of the country that he lives in? Okay. It's all one United Kingdom and Northern Ireland. She's a British citizen as well as an Irish one. Is that okay then? Does he take the mickey or the people from, I don't know, Yorkshire?
Okay. But it seems, what's the phrase? It seems incongruous today, Trish, that we're talking about.
Exactly.
No, but we're talking about it, and look at the riots in certain parts of Belfast and Derry over the last few days.
All part of the same problem.
Which is what?
You have an issue of some description, little or large, with somebody else, and you react wrongly.
But when they broke down that the peace gate last night between the Springfield and the Shankill, like they would have been just attacking each other because of their perceived religion.
Yeah.
Which is...
Joe, you're asking the wrong woman. I grew up in Lurgan in County Armagh.
Mm-hmm.
What age would I have been in 69 when this started? And I left in 82 after the hunger strikers. I have been told by a psychotherapist that I have a very high level of what I think, the danger that I think is normal because of that.
Explain that to me.
That what other people see as dangerous, I kind of shrug my shoulders and go, oh, really? Okay. Because if I see something like that every single day of my young life.
Okay.
So you're asking me, what did I think of them breaking down the barriers?
Mm-hmm.
I actually think if you put barriers there, that's what people are going to do. Now, take the barriers as a metaphor.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we not meant to be breaking them down?
But
physically.
Yeah.
I just think it's part of the thing of it's okay to hurt other people. It's okay to be derisory. It's okay. And when's it not okay? And is it okay for some people and not okay for other people?
But if you were, I don't know where you're living now, Trish, but if you were asked, if someone says, hey, Trish, where are you from? You say, Lurgan, you say, can you explain to me what's happening with those gangs of some of them 12 years of age attacking each other?
Can I explain? I just think, Joe, in my room when I used to, the last job I was in, I had a little statement, hurt people, hurt people.
So does that mean you have sympathy for them?
I have understanding. I don't have sympathy for somebody using violence, but I have an understanding.
And when you say...
I think hurt people hurt other people.
My God. And how do we stop that circle? How do you break that circle?
We thought we had it broken with the peace process.
Yeah.
We obviously hadn't. I live in Limerick. I absolutely love the place.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has an issue with my accent.
Yeah.
Apart from the occasional giggle that I get sometimes when I say things.
Are your religion?
Or my religion. It's not even mentioned as part of.
Yeah.
Not at all. Absolutely not. Mm. But that's not. We started off talking about Nadine.
I know, but I just felt on the day that's not in it.
The fact that somebody, are they hurting themselves that they think it's okay? Are they jealous of the person?
Mm.
Are they arrogant? Do they think they're smarter than the person?
Okay.
What was the reason that he made that statement? And if he was chastised in the past for the blackface and had to apologise, what did he learn?
And you mentioned, I'm intrigued, you mentioned that your psychotherapist said you had
a high acceptance of treating danger as normal.
We were
doing a thing on fear and phobia, and I couldn't think of anything that I was afraid of.
Yeah, okay.
And some people were afraid of spiders and the dark and various things. And, and he said, no, but you have a very high level of an acceptance. Your idea of normal relative to danger is, you know, a little bit skewed.
And was that in a group setting? Did you want to tell me, or was it?
It was, of course, but sure, that's what it was all about. When you're going to do psychotherapy training, you have
to get
your
training. Okay.
The edge is knocked off of you before you're let loose on the world.
Okay, and that's what you work at now as a psychotherapist?
Yes. Part of what I do.
Okay, of course. But did you know, for example, in some countries, there's subtitles. Some countries that speak English, there's subtitles on Derry Girls, the show.
I would understand that, yeah.
Okay, but you that's of a different category.
I think so.
Yes, okay.
I do. I actually think so. You see, where I have the issue, Joe, is this: don't accept me onto your baking show, having interviewed me or seen me on other programs.
Okay.
And know the accent that I have, and then use it to make a cheap shot.
Okay, and don't. Well, you're invited. She's a celebrity. That's why she's on it. She'll get viewers for them. Nadine will. So don't invite me on if you're going to sneer at my accent. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And she's a guest on the show. I don't think I can remember anybody teaching me that that's how you treat a guest.
Hmm.
Wouldn't be my idea of treating a guest. No, I just thought when my friend sent it to me, I went, I knew exactly what she meant. Here we go again.
Are you? It's such an insubstantive question to a psychotherapist. But are you optimistic about Northern Ireland?
No. Why do you think I left? I left 39 years ago, and I cannot see myself ever returning to live there.
And have your family still there, Trish?
Of course, I have 6 sisters, 4 brothers.
And what do they say when they hear that the 11th member of their family won't come back or doesn't want to come back or hates the place?
I'd say my mother summed it up. She came to visit me once here in Limerick and we went for a walk up the canal bank and she looked around and she said, you live, we exist.
My God. And do you hate the place?
No, I love it. It's very hard not to love your home.
Yeah, of course,
but there are a lot of things I don't like about it. And I certainly, when I left, my intention was get married, have children. I would not bring my children up there, not for love nor money. I brought them up some of the time in Listowel where I went first and the rest of the time in Limerick. I'm glad I did.
Would you go on holidays there?
Yes, certain times of the year and very carefully avoid other times of the year.
Yeah, you avoid the 12th, for example.
Of course.
Yeah.
And most of the summer.
And that was portrayed in Derry Girls as a very sectarian time, as you know.
Yeah.
And people, nationalists, or people who were perceived to be nationalists or Catholics having to leave or go on holidays.
Yeah, head to Donegal.
And do you visit the North? Do you visit your 10 siblings?
I did not that often, but I did up until our friend COVID.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I haven't seen anybody since December.
Hmm.
And prior to that, almost a year. But I would go up a couple of times a year, yes.
Couple of times?
Yeah. Well, my mother and father were alive, I'd have gone much more often.
Of course, of course. And just come back briefly. When you went, didn't you say earlier you went for elocution lessons?
Well, that sounds very posh. I went to a school, okay, which was a little bit la-di-da. And okay, among the things, we had to go to school on Saturday to learn how to be young ladies.
Okay.
And the elocution was part of it. Now, there are plenty of people who know me who would think that they failed miserably.
Yeah, okay. And how did you get into, give me the words, how did you get into a school that was above your station, so to speak?
there was a scholarship you could get to go there.
Well done.
So I'm the middle child of 11. I'm afraid I wouldn't have been going there unless that's the route that I took.
Wow. And what did your parents do in terms of having an income for rearing 11 children?
My mother was a stay-at-home mother, can you imagine, with 11 kids?
Wow.
And my father worked until he was 42. And then he had, let's say, a setback that put him, he couldn't work anymore.
Oh, God. 42?
Yeah. Somebody said to me, your poor father and he's so young. And I remember I was 11 at the time and I thought, he's ancient.
He's not, yeah.
Yeah. And he died at 65.
And the 42 stop, was that due to the troubles or?
No. He had an accident and he had, as a result, a lot of heart problems and all sorts of issues health-wise.
Okay.
So he didn't work anymore after that. So he was on a disability pension or benefit or something.
Yeah.
We didn't pay much heed.
Okay.
As long as we got food, we didn't really care. Yeah. No, there would have been no massive wealth swirling around our household.
But would your family have benefited from the free third level education?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
100%.
That was a magnificent thing.
We wouldn't all be where we are if that had not been around.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. The British system.
Well, remember, that wasn't available in the South.
Absolutely, and I've learned that since I came here.
Yeah.
No, I will not take that away. That was absolutely the saving of huge numbers of people from large families and poor families.
Yeah, education. But the fact that third level education became available in the North almost as free second level education became available down here was bizarre.
Yeah,
they were so
some
far
contrast.
Ahead. Yeah. Anyway, okay, Trish, stay safe and thanks.
I would like Nadine to know that she isn't alone, which she probably knows, and that none of that has anything at all got to do with her. That's got to do with the person who delivered the aside. And I don't think it behoves him. I don't think it raises him in status.
Okay.
That's my bottom line.
Okay, but hurt people. Okay, take that on board.
That's my motto, and that's where I get my understanding.
But why did you do that? Yeah, but as a psychotherapist, that's what you're trying to do as a part of. You're trying to work with people to go through things like previous hurt that might give an understanding and might provide a pathway forward in terms of
knowledge. To understand your own hurt to know where the vitriol is coming from that makes you want to hurt other people.
Yeah.
I think you do. I don't see how you can manage if you don't understand what makes you cross, makes you angry, makes you upset. If you don't look at it and sort it out, you will be the same forever.
Yeah.
My mother used to say there are very few saints in a dozen. Whatever that means.
Well, was there 11 of you?
Yes.
Yeah, I suspect she was the saint.
Well, in hindsight, the poor woman, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay.
Okay, Trish. Was there someone who wants to talk to Trish? Okay, can we talk to Trish? Let me take a quick break. Trish, you should be presenting this programme. You're a qualified.
All right.
You're a qualified psychotherapist. Stay there. 51551, my jam.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul, with a range up to 452 kilometres.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Okay, Trish Gordon has contacted us about the episode of Bake Off with Nadine Coyle, and Matt Lucas remarked on that he couldn't understand what Nadine was saying because of her accent, and then we moved on to a conversation about what's happening, obviously, up the north at the moment. Michael Rattigan, you're listening to Trish.
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe. And I'm not standing up for Matt Lucas. I think he's a very good comedian. They done the show over here with his other mate,
David Williams.
And as I said, yeah. Now the thing about it was a different time, because it was, if I can use the word carefree, it was carefree. I mean, way back then you had a group as the Black and White Minstrels, and yet millions of people, and I mean millions, watched that show. And there was no big deal about it until years later. But now, if they'd done it today, they wouldn't get away with it for starters, because that'd be a total insult. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it, why Matt Lucas apologised, and I need to know why the guy had to apologise when the BBC or whoever, like, if you're doing a show for the BBC.
Well, he didn't apologise over the Nadine Coyle accent.
Yeah, but you see, if you're doing a show, like when you get the likes of Jimmy Carr. Now, it's a different ball game if you say you go to the Olympia, right? There's no cameras there. You have an audience of there, maybe 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. So there's nobody to tell you what to say. But if you're doing a show for the televisions, I remember watching the Matt Lucas show on the television.
Michael, what's your point, please?
The point is that when somebody's doing a show, and the likes of Till Death Do Us Part, why are the scripts not shown to the producers first? Well, whoever writes these scripts, why are they not shown to the producers?
Yeah, but you're saying in previous times, it was carefree.
Yeah.
It was more carefree, but it wasn't carefree.
But even then, it's only now we're coming back and saying, no, oh no, you can't do that anymore.
Are you saying that there's too much political correctness?
There is. Okay. I mean, satire is satire. When you get the likes of Jimmy Carr, and what every second thing that's come out was about this, or about someone, or about somebody else, And it is, define the word satire if you want to. But you see, most of the comedians, they know nothing else. I went to see Bernard Mannix, and I have to be honest with you, I walked out. I didn't find him funny. But I mean, as I said, but when I looked around and I saw the audience, they were all laughing. And now, as I said, I couldn't understand that. I just could not understand.
Why did you walk out?
Because I just thought it was a bit hard because there was a lot of people there, Asian people there.
Okay, it was offensive. It was racist.
Yeah, I thought some of it was. But I mean, there's people that can go up there and tell jokes. I mean, the best person in my book had to be, without a doubt, and I would put him him anywhere in the world, is Brendan Grace.
Yeah, okay, was, that's fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. You enjoy the show. You could take a family to the show.
Okay, well, we're talking.
Yeah,
about
but the only talk. Thing I did, what I want, to, yeah. basically, what I wanted to say was, if someone is doing a show like the Matt Lucas show, producers should look at a script.
Okay, but it's like Lifeline. You can't Lifeline.
It's live.
But we've no idea who's coming on next a lot of the time.
I know.
You know what I mean?
I know. I'm sure you have a meeting with your producers or whatever, and you probably know what you're going to talk about the next day.
No, we don't. We have loads of meetings. We have a brilliant team. But the nature of Liveline is that it's unpredictable. But the point I'm making is that Matt Lucas' banter as well is unpredictable as well, I presume.
Yeah, but if you're doing a show for the television, Joe, and it's going out, like they did do their television shows as well, and it's obvious that it's recorded. But what my argument is this: why don't the producers open the box or whatever they are, say, right, we want to have a look at the script, Matt, before we put a camera on you. Let me see what the script is like. And if they're not happy, well, then that's it. Well, that's not going into it. But they never did, Joe.
Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
My producer's in my ear at the moment telling me to call an ad break. But, Michael, thanks again.
All right, God bless you. Bye-bye.
Mind yourself.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Trish, thanks again to you. That's Trish Gordon in Limerick.
No problem, Joe.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Orla O'Connor.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very good. How are you doing?
Where is Nelson's ear?
It's sitting right in front of me. Well, a bit of it is. I'm holding it as we speak.
In what jurisdiction?
In Edinburgh.
And what's it doing in Edinburgh? It should be in Dublin.
I don't know if anybody knows about that. I probably shouldn't say that on air.
No, it's fascinating. 55 years after it went missing, we found... How did you come into possession of... by the way, can you prove that it's Nelson's ear?
Well, I don't know. Actually, I don't know if I can prove it.
Okay, no, I'm...
It was a little piece of rock that was always sitting in our mantelpiece when I was growing up.
And tell us how it came into your provenance.
My father and his twin brother, my father Brendan O'Connor and his twin Kieran, stole Nelson's head when they were at our college in 1966, along with a few other fellow students from NCAD.
We were talking about it a few weeks ago because we were looking for one man that was in the photograph, called Martin Lyons.
Oh, I didn't know about him, actually.
Yeah, and then Nelson's head was in the photograph. That's how, well, we found Martin's widow in Canada. And now we found Nelson's ear in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And how, okay, so your dad and your uncle, his twin, are they still alive, by the way? Are they still alive?
They're not. Oh, no, God. They're not.
Okay.
No.
They were involved in National College of Art and Design Students Union.
Yeah.
He was president of it.
He was president of the Student Union,
And what's the story he tells of Nelson's head?
So it came about, basically, they had a student ball at the Clarence Hotel. And very few students actually paid to get in, so they were left with a massive debt.
Okay.
And they had to figure out a way to pay this debt
about
9 days after the explosion.
Yeah.
So they saw the kind of headlines in the paper that Nelson's head was sitting in Corporation Yard.
That's right.
So they requested permission to go and draw the head as an art project.
Ah, brilliant.
Yes. So they drew much more than that, and they drew plans out of the building. And then they recruited some friends for their height and strength, and they broke into the building a few nights later. I think it was on St. Patrick's Day, and they stole the head.
And it's a substantive head. It was on top of Nelson's pillar, obviously,
but
it was a big piece of Portland stone or whatever it was sculpted out of. So they hijacked the head. And how did they make money out of it then?
So they hijacked the head, and then they began to hire the head out for promotions and special appearances. So it appeared on the back of the Clancy Brothers album, and it appeared for a Tights commercial on Killiney Beach.
Right.
And it appeared on stage with the Dubliners, and they were always one step ahead of the guards. So as soon as the guards got to wherever the Dubliners were playing, they got the head out stage door. They had then promised to give it back several times on the Late Late Show, I think,
and they made
a paper mache instead. And never give it back. So it became a bit of a national embarrassment. And then an antique dealer from London called Benny Gray found out about the boys. And he came to Dublin and apparently had a pint with every man he could until he found the boys, to find out where the head was.
Okay.
So I think it was the manager of the Dublin, John Sheridan, who put him in touch with the twins and their friends. And he then offered them £250 a month for a year to take the head back to London. So that is what happened.
And did Nelson's head go to London?
Nelson's head went to London. It was photographed in Trafalgar Square with Benny Gray on the front page of the Times.
Okay.
I mean, before they did all of this, Dad and I think it was Ken Dolan was one of the other boys. His mother knit them all balaclavas, thinking it was for a masked ball. And they then got a photograph taken with Nelson's head, and it was in the papers the next day in Dublin saying, "We have Nelson's head." So that was how they kind of promoted the fact that it was available for promotions.
Did they make money to pay off the student union debt?
They paid off all the student union debt, and they also set up a bursary for young artists wanting to go to the art school.
Wow.
So, and then when they finally, I think my dad had told me that Charlie Haughey eventually summoned him and Kieran and said, "If you don't have the head back, you'll all end up in Mountjoy." And at that point, I think Benny Gray got a visit in London, and then the head came back. But nobody would officially receive the head back. So they ended up getting a float in O'Connell Street, and the Dubliners played on it, and they sang Up Went Nelson, and they ended up handing it back to some official in Dublin. But the mayor, nobody would come along to get it. It was such an embarrassment. So they had a big homecoming party with it. I mean, there's lots of stuff online. I think it's a film waiting to be made.
Yeah, so how long was it missing for? It was over a year.
Over a year.
And it's now located, as I say, in the Gilbert Library in Pierce Street in Dublin.
It is indeed,
Would you be prepared to return the year?
No.
Oh, no. Why not?
I don't have the whole ear. I've only got a section of the ear that fell off on route to London. So I'm keeping hold of that.
And your dad and your uncle, the twins, are they, you said your dad, both of them passed?
They have, I'm afraid, yeah.
But they'd be young men, would they? What age?
They were, yeah. They were young, yeah. They would be 70 odd now.
But did they stay in the art world? Did they become architects or creatives? What did they do?
Graphic designers. Graphic designer, and Kieran had an art store. They did various things. My dad used to look after bands. So after he finished in Dublin, he would have brought a lot of bands up to Derry during the Troubles. And
what was your dad's first name?
Brendan
O'Connor. Okay.
Yes.
And your uncle
and Kieran. The funny bit of the story, actually, my dad's other brother, Tony O'Connor, worked for RTE, and it was his very early days of reporting, and he was apparently reporting on the theft of Nelson's head, right. And the boys had hidden it in his coal bunker at that time, and he had no idea, and it was his first day on the job.
Oh,
that's the story I got. I mean, there's a lot of tall tales. Not sure which ones are true, but it's a good story.
Well, it was a very tall monument, so there's plenty of tall tales to go.
Absolutely.
To go with it.
Yep.
And the other man you mentioned who was in on the conspiracy.
Ken Dolan.
And is he still with us?
I don't think he is, but I think there was somebody else. Joe Pilkington is another.
Oh,
one.
Oh yeah, well,
Joe
has passed away. A number of his families are daughters are fantastic actors. Joe died young. Ken Dolan. Did Ken work here in RT?
I think Ken passed away as well, because they did make a documentary years ago, and it's just my dad and Ken that were in it, because they couldn't track anybody else down.
Okay. Or would you send us a photograph of the little piece of rock you have, just for
sentimental reasons?
And don't,
as long as you don't hold it against me.
I was going to say that. And don't photograph it. That gives away any idea of your location. Because the head man in An Garda Síochána might be knocking on your door. And you'll get an earful of this and an earful of that. But anyway, it's a brilliant story, Orla. Please send
it's
us a
great
photograph.
Story.
Stay safe.
I will do, no bother.
Stay safe.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Fergus Sweeney produced, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul, with a range up to 452 kilometres.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe@rte.ie.